Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear is a free preview of a podcast on our $5 exclusive episodes tier at patreon.com/retronauts. And if you want to hear the whole thing, please go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up at the $5 exclusive episodes tier. Once you do that, you'll get access to all of our previous exclusive episodes and our future ones as well, as long as you remain a patron, and our exclusive episodes will launch every other Friday. Again, that is the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts, and I'll let you get to this free preview of one of our exclusive episodes. I want to go over some preliminary things about the movie. So, released on August 18th, 1995. So this is the fourth in a quartet of video game adaptation movies that came out around this time. The first one was Mario Brothers in May of 93. Then we have Double Dragon in November of 94. Mm-hmm. And then Street Fighter in December of 94, like almost 1995. And outside of the sequel to this movie in 97, the next video game movie we get is 1999's Wing Commander, which has really little to do with the video game.
Wow.
And then we have 2001's Tomb Raider. And after that, like, the floodgates are open, Uwe Boll gets a bunch of money, and the aughts are just lousy with bad video game movies. But here they're just kind of trickling out, and really, like, Super Mario Brothers in America in live action is really the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which it was a shadow cast on all future video game movies. Even this one could barely get it past out the door, and if it wasn't at New Line, if they tried to sell this at like Sony or Universal, I don't think this movie comes out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the people who made the game didn't want to be a movie after Super Mario Brothers. They were reluctant.
Yeah.
So, and it's also the biggest success out of these early video game adaptations, because Super Mario Brothers, we did two podcasts about it. It lost a ton of money. Double Dragon made for nothing but still lost money, because who cared about Double Dragon in 1994?
Oh my God. Yeah, nobody. Yeah. Nobody.
The series, like, the games were mishandled, and like 1990 was the good time for a Double Dragon movie, not 1994. Mm-hmm. Street Fighter was a fairly modest hit, but this movie made back like six times its budget. And it's important to note that nobody cared about Double Dragon in 94. People were playing Mario games in 93, but there was no big new release, and arguably, like, the hype wouldn't be back for Mario until 1996 and Super Mario 64. Like, Mario was such a part of our lives, it wasn't like a phenomenon anymore. Mm-hmm. like Mortal Kombat was in 1995.
Yeah, I mean, MK3 comes out, like, this was in the promotional video that they actually charged money for, but in it they said like 1995, the year of Mortal Kombat, and it really was. I mean even compare that to now, like, Last of Us took a decade to get an adaptation. Halo even longer, like almost 20 years.
I always forget about the Halo TV show.
Yeah. I mean, it's on Paramount Plus, Bob, the most popular streaming service there is.
Castlevania took, 30 years to get a TV show?
Yeah.
If you're not counting Captain N, and we're not.
No.
Don't comment at me, please. So when the Street Fighter movie launched, like, the Street Fighter 2 brand was in like year two of heavy competition with Mortal Kombat, and there was obviously with the console wars, there were the Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat wars on the playground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on the magazine covers too, which I kind of miss that era of like every by the time we got in the games press, it was so controlled about, well, also magazines were just about dead, but I worked at a magazine company, and the deals with publishers were so strict that, like, you would piss off one publisher or the other if you did even a good-looking cover of, like, Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter. Like, both publishers would get pissed at you of, like, hey, we don't want to share a cover with this. We're not giving you assets next time or whatever.
Yeah, like, don't mention them in the same breath as us.
Exactly.
Don't remind people of our competition. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the exact right time to launch this movie was in August of 95, because it was right between the arcade release and the home release of Mortal Kombat 3. And then if you're just playing these games at home, it's like 93, 94, 95, home ports of these games. I think by 3, the feeling was like, I've kind of had enough of this for now. And 3 just was very, very silly.
Yeah.
It was kind of like an overstuffed game with too many ideas. And
a trillion cheat codes, yeah, like all those little markers that come up at the start of it. And also definitely it came at a bad time on consoles, because to get it on the Genesis or the Super NES, like, it sucked. Like, those home console ports could barely handle, like, half of the characters.
Well, we didn't know any better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was fine for me, but yes, the arcade versions were better. It's not like you're playing it on the Game Boy, though. And yes, they did put these on Game Boy.
And then it's so funny. Again, this is how time feels different the older you get. But yes, from 1995 to then 1997, by that point, 2 years is nothing to me now. But as a kid, I was like, 2 years had passed. Oh, Mortal Kombat's bullshit. Like, it's not cool anymore, guys. Move on to something else.
I was thinking the same thing, because as you get older, you just die quicker, because years have less meaning because you're experiencing less new things. And when I was a kid, it's like, yes, 95, I could tell you how different that is from 94 and 96. And in like 97, I'm like, how dare you release a Mortal Kombat movie? Who cares?
Yes,
was my,
yeah,
my opinion, which is why I never saw Annihilation, a famously, like, one of the most famously bad movies.
I saw it in theaters and I was ready to cut it all the slack in the world, and even I, a dumb 15-year-old, was like, this sucks.
Who knows if we'll do a commentary for that. We have to be very desperate. I'll have to watch it for the first time. So let's talk about the people who made this before we go into the commentary. The director, now very notable for the wrong reasons, but Paul W.S. Anderson, not Paul Thomas Anderson. He's the good Paul Anderson. Mm-hmm. But Paul Anderson would become known as the video game movie guy, or more specifically, the Resident Evil movie guy, because he made like, what, like five or six of those?
I think seven, actually. Directed, wow. I think five. But yeah, it's, I mean, and it's because it was with his wife, Mila Jovovich. And,
yeah.
And also because those films were crazy profitable. I've seen two of them and they both suck, but I cannot deny that they their profitability
made for nothing, yeah, and making back a lot more money. And yeah, can you believe his last movie as of this recording was 2020's Monster Hunter?
God, yeah. He thought that, I mean, who knows what would have happened if there wasn't a pandemic, but he thought he had, like, well, yeah, it's just Capcom franchise, I barely adapted, and I put my hot wife in it. Like, and
also the army is in the movie. Like, well, it's, yeah, the army fighting dinosaurs or monsters. Yes, it's Monster Hunter. I like Monster Hunter. I don't like the movie. I like the game. Sorry. Mm-hmm,
yeah, I guess. Well, and also he is somewhat notorious for unsafe sets for stunt performers, I believe. Yeah,
that's how you make your movies cheap. Yeah. And then I was looking at his career. I didn't know he had all these like Redbox specials that he made or produced. Like, he produced 3 Death Race movies.
What?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Like,
yeah,
some weird 2010s Death Race reboot series.
Wow, I didn't know this happened. I hope he wasn't one of those producers who was taking advantage of Bruce Willis.
I don't think he was in the Bruce Willis conspiracy. Like, let's make this old man do whatever he wants.
You know what? Let's don't ask questions. We'll just film him and put the earpiece in and don't ask questions.
Just say what we tell you. You'll get mush at the end of the recording. That poor man.
Yeah.
Anyhow, now we all feel bad about making fun of all of his, again, Redbox specials.
Yeah, he did.
He made 8 a year because he wanted to help his children. And also, he's being manipulated.
He barely knew he was in them.
Yeah.
But he was like, I'm about to retire. I guess I better just be in 17 films and make $30 million just to make sure my great-grandchildren are rich after this. Like, his children definitely are going to live rich forever.
Yes, rumor and Scout are fine, everybody.
Right, yes, yeah.
So, yeah, Paul W.S. Anderson has an interesting backstory in that he started as a writer for a British crime series that you've never seen. I've never seen it. And then he went from that to write and direct the indie crime thriller called Shopping, which is actually the first appearance of Jude Law in a feature film, and it came out in 1994.
I never seen this one. It sounds cool, but he definitely, that almost then sounds like the Marvel movie method of hiring directors of, like, oh, you made 2 small things, I'm going to hand you a giant budget and boss you around kind of deal. Then.
Yeah, like the guy who makes all those Spider-Man movies now, whatever his name is, I think like Disney just changed his name.
Yes, yeah.
Because they own him. He made one movie, Cop Car, like a thriller, and then they're like, okay, you just make Spider-Mans now.
And
go to the factory.
And you do what we say.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't fight us on any script changes. Prepare yourself. Model combat's on today. Prepare yourself.